you won't realize it. That's the other thing that the studies show. You ask the kids, do you think that these songs are changing you? They say, no, it's totally ridiculous. It's just a song. I'm not going to go out and do that stuff. The kids have no awareness that, yes, how you choose to entertain yourself is changing who you are.
These songs are activating, like, these demons.
By listening to Drake and Bruno Mars, it's going to change you.
I don't want to be that girl anymore.
Don't allow your children to watch the Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, or Nick Jr.
Everyone's worked up over Andrew Tate. Why is nobody going after Bruno Mars for exploiting women like this?
That's a fair question. Inshallah.
Inshallah. God will. Greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Dean Show. My next guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs, MD, PhD, is an American psychologist and a practicing family physician and the author of Why Gender Matters, Boys Adrift, Girls on the Edge, and the New York Times bestselling author, Collapse of Parenting. He's also has some things to say about listening to Drake, Lady Gaga, Cardi B, and the like.
That's kind of why I didn't want to do this song, Shake It, or like any drill song, because it's like these songs are activating like these demons. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be that girl anymore. I just want to be a mother. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to be that old Cardi anymore. I left that lifestyle a long time ago, bro. Like, I don't want to be that anymore.
And the dangerous effects of it? Without further ado, let's bring out my special guest, Dr. Leonard Sachs.
Let me introduce you to my faith. We have one God, His name's Allah, Allah. And His final messenger's Muhammad, peace be upon Him. This is our religion, Islam, Islam. This is the Deen Show.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. Thank God. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks for inviting me.
So me and you go way back. You probably don't know that, but I read one of your books long time ago, and I was really impressed. I believe it was Girls on the Edge. And then recently, I had one of my students, my jiu-jitsu students, Dr. Joe, he'll be really excited. I got you on a program. He said, man, you got to get this guy on the show. Here we go on the Dean Show.
Cold and wet here in Philadelphia, but otherwise we're doing good.
Great, great. Let's get right into the topic here. I got a lot of things I want to cover with you. Let's get right into this modern songs. You call it Sex for Money, you know, and the dangerous effects. Saying Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion advise women to ask for car while having sex with a man, adding that a man paid my tuition in return for sex. So the question is, what kind of mindset does this create for young, impressionable minds?
Yeah, my first recommendation for parents is no earbuds, no headsets. You need to know what your kids are listening to. And many of the most popular songs in the United States are really toxic. Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, the song you're referring to is WAP, W-A-P. And I'm not going to say what that stands for because it's obscene. And it is meant to be obscene. And it is a very degraded and sad perspective on the human experience that you have sex not because it's part of a loving relationship, but because you want this man to give you money for it. Or Bruno Mars in his Grammy award-winning song, That's What I Like, approaches a woman he doesn't know and again offers her money for sex. Turn around and drop it for a player because that's what I like. And the Recording Academy said, yes, that's the best song. That's the best United States has to offer. 6 Grammys for that song. parents need to be aware that American popular culture, not all of it, but much of it now, is really toxic and is promoting a view of human experience and of man and woman that really is harmful and leads to anxiety, depression, disengagement.
You know, I want to commend you. I mean, you're very brave, you know, to come out. You know, you don't see a lot of people in your position. They kind of just go with the flow, kind of, you know, scared to speak out against these things. But so I want to start off with commending you to having the courage to come out and address these things. So that was my next question with Bruno Mars. You talk about him earning 6 Grammys for his song, That's What I Like, in which he offered a woman gold jewelry and a shopping spree in Paris if she just turn around and drop it for a player, because that's what I like. So, so I'm asking, you know, what is this teaching men? Everyone worked up, you know, everyone's worked up over Andrew Tate. Why is nobody going after Bruno Mars for exploiting women like this?
That's a fair question.
Brothers and sisters, we've all had loved ones that passed away. A mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a close family member. But one of the mercies of our deen, Islam, is that we can have an intention to do good deeds on our loved ones' behalf. And what greater of a continuous good deed, sadaqah jariyah, than investing on their behalf in the Deen Center, a masjid and Nagadawa Center that will benefit generations to come, inshallah. So click the link below, donate right now. May God Almighty Allah reward all of you.
Is it fair?
I certainly don't want to get into a comparison of Bruno Mars and Andrew Tate. That's just not. That's not going to be productive for most of you.
No, we don't have to. We don't have to do that.
But
I'm just asking a fair question. That's it. I'm just asking a fair question.
The deeper question is, what has happened to American culture? You know, I've lived in this country all my life, born and raised in the United States, and a generation ago, two men, Loggins and Messina, had a huge hit in this country with their song, Danny's Song. Even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey. Everything will bring a chain of joy. And in the morning when I rise, bring a tear of joy to my eyes and tell me everything's going to be all right. Even though we ain't got money, love is more important than money. That's a very healthy message. I'm so in love with you, honey. That's true. That's right. To teach kids that money's not the most important thing. Love and courtesy and respect are the most important thing. And that was the message that was being sent by American popular culture a generation ago. Not anymore. The most popular shows, the most popular TikTok videos, the most popular songs, many of them, not all, but many of them communicate what I call, in my book, The Collapse of Parenting, I call the culture of disrespect. American popular culture now teaches kids that it's cute, that it's funny, that it's cool to be disrespectful, not only to adults and to parents, but to one another. You'll see American kids wearing T-shirts slogans that say things like, you look better on Facebook, or I'm not shy, I just don't like you. You know, and I was speaking to kids in Scotland, and I was showing them some of these. You don't see these outside the United States, incidentally, or in Canada. You'll see them in the United States and Canada, but nowhere else. And I was showing these when I spoke to kids in Perthshire, north of Edinburgh, Scotland. And I showed them some of these T-shirts, and the kids in Scotland were puzzled. They wondered, why would you go out in public with a T-shirt that says to the whole world, I'm not shy, I just don't like you? To the kids in Scotland, that didn't seem funny. It just seemed rude and childish. But American kids, born and raised and immersed in this culture of disrespect, they think this is funny. You know, I'm a family doctor in my own practice. A mom of an eight-year-old boy, was saying to me, he's gotten so disrespectful and talking back. Where is he getting this? And I said, do you have the Disney Channel? Nickelodeon, Nick Jr. They said, oh, sure. I said, you need to turn it off. You need to prohibit Disney, Nickelodeon, Nick Jr. And 3 weeks later, mom told me it stopped.
Wow.
He was learning this from the Disney Channel. The Disney Channel is now full of shows that teach kids that it's cute and funny to be disrespectful to parents. To talk
what was that advice again that you gave? Simple advice. What was it?
Don't allow your children to watch the Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, or Nick Jr. Not all television is bad. You know, I don't have a problem with the Cooking Channel or National Geographic, but
great
Disney,
advice.
Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., it's teaching this culture of disrespect. You've got shows where the parents are clueless idiots, and the kids know better than the parents do, and this is supposed to be funny, like Dog with a Blog, where the dog is always smarter than the father, who's supposedly a school psychologist but knows nothing about kids, and that he's the joke. He's the butt of the joke. And this is true of a lot of American television. Modern Family, the straight dad is always an idiot. His three kids are always wiser than their dumb, bumbling dad. The idiot father has become a mainstream image in American popular television, and it is not helpful. It's not even true. You know, in my own practice as a family doctor, most of the dads are not idiots and bumbling fools, but American popular culture now portrays them that way. Mm-hmm. We can talk about why that's so, but the bottom line for parents is you need to be on your guard. American popular culture is now often a vector of this culture of disrespect.
Let's get into one more very popular, very well-known figure, Drake. In one of his popular songs, you quote this Jimmy Cooks, the sexually explicit and profanity-laced lyrics, too graphic for IFS to print, but the New York Times reviewer praised Drake for his lyrical vividness. It's so sexually explicit, but the question is, what can listening to Drake from a psychological perspective teach you? Teach you to respect women, or just use women as objects?
Yeah, we don't have to guess. We actually have studies where researchers have followed kids over time, and so the way to conceptualize these studies, if you've got two kids at 12 years of age and they don't differ on how they view women or how they view sexuality, and then one kid is listening to Drake and that kind of hip hop, and the other kid is listening to something else, listening to, I don't know, Taylor Swift. And the kid who's listening to Drake 3 years later is much more likely to think that sex is transactional, that you pay money for sex, wow, that it's okay for a man to hit a woman. What you listen to, how you choose to entertain yourself, changes who you are. And this is especially true for children and teenagers. I hope people won't be offended if I quote a line from the Hebrew Bible, Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. Above everything else, guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it.
Guard your heart.
Guard your heart. Guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it. How you choose to entertain yourself is changing who you are. If you choose to entertain yourself by listening to Drake and Bruno Mars, it's going to change you.
Yeah.
You won't realize it. That's the other thing that the studies show. You ask the kids, do you think that these songs are changing you? They say, no, it's totally ridiculous. It's just a song. I'm not going to go out and do that stuff. The kids have no awareness that, yes, how you choose to entertain yourself is changing who you are. So parents have to be in charge and have to say, no, you're not allowed to listen to that stuff. I'm going to know what you're listening to, and you're not allowed to listen to that. And parents have to be out front, because if your kid lives in the United States, it's not reasonable, it's not fair to expect your 12-year-old, if the other kids are listening to Drake, what is your kid supposed to say? Well, I don't want to listen to that because it offends my modesty. I mean, how is a kid even supposed to know the words to say, and let alone say them? You have to allow the kid to say, hey, my parents have installed this filter on my phone. I'm not able to listen to that. Or if I do listen to it, they'll get an alarm on bark and I'll lose my device. Mm-hmm. And I strongly advise parents to install parental monitoring software on any device that has internet access to limit what your kids are listening to. Warn your kids, look, Yeah, you, I'm sure you can get around it, but I'll know what you're doing because the device is going to show me. You're not allowed to listen to that stuff because it's bad. Parents need to have the confidence to limit, govern, and guide what their kids are doing, and they need to understand that the culture has become very toxic. It's not the culture of 20 years ago or 50 years ago. It's a toxic culture, and that means parents got to do more than our parents did.
Well, you mentioned the heart. It reminded me of a statement from Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, who mentioned something in a similar effect about the heart, guarding the heart. He said there's a morsel of flesh in the body, meaning the heart. If it's sound, the whole body will be sound. So this is just so refreshing to hear a physician to go, you know, into something like this of the heart. And, you know, if more people would gravitate towards this, this is something that can help to alleviate a lot of these ills that are happening. No one's connecting it to the Drakes, to the Cardi B's, but now we have good enough evidence. You quote that the kind of music kids, I mean, I would say even adults, listen to influence their beliefs, attitudes, and behavior. And also you quote in a long cohort study, researchers found that teens who listen to music with degrading sexual content are more likely to engage in sexual risky behaviors. Mm-hmm. And you just elaborated on this. You know, this is so profound. And many people are not, they're naive and not making these connections. So they're just handing over the iPhone, you know, and says, you know, buying these kids for the kids. But, you know, the average doctor, you know, or psychologist is not making this connection. They're getting to hear it for the first time here. And for some people, like, wow, it's just, you know, it's an aha moment. So,
Well, it takes courage because when you
you definitely
your kids,
got it.
You're
definitely
going to limit what they do. They may very well say none of the other parents do that. And that may well be the case. But again, you have to have the courage as a parent to say, I'm not their dad. I'm your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it's my responsibility to limit, govern, and guide what you're experiencing. Again, a major objective of my book, The Collapse of Parenting, is to empower parents, to give parents that confidence to stand up and do the right thing. And the original title of that book, the title of the book I sent to the publisher was The Collapse of American Parenting. And the subtitle was Why Most Kids Would Now Be Better Off Raised Outside North America.
Mm.
And again, I've spoken for many Muslim communities across North America, and many of those parents are immigrants and were not born in this country, and they're struggling with the defiance and disrespect that they encounter. I spoke for the Islamic Association of Greater Detroit, and after my talk, a husband and wife who were born and raised in Syria but have lived here for many years, they have four kids. They normally speak Arabic at home, but they told me that when their oldest son wants to be defiant or disrespectful, he switches to English. Oh. And the parents told me that his whole body language changes. He slouches. He gets a smirk on his face. He starts speaking to us in English. And Dad said, it's like Justin Bieber just walked into the house.
Justin Bieber, wow.
English has become the language of disrespect. So one of the recommendations I have when I speak for Muslim communities is if you, the parent, were born outside the United States, if you are fluent in another language, speak that language at home. Make sure your kids are fluent in your native language. Find other families that speak that language. Make connections with them. Because American, English-speaking culture is now really toxic. And if you can connect to a different culture and show kids that there's a different culture where it's not cool to be defiant and disrespectful, and connect kids to other families who speak that language and enjoy that music, that's really helpful because it gives kids a perspective that, hey, Drake and Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga and Cardi B, they're not the whole world. There's another culture. There are other cultures out there. American culture is not the only culture. That's a very helpful message to communicate to your kid.
You also quote in your article, I want to touch upon this. I was really blown away. And you kind of know this from watching I Love Lucy and whatnot, but you know, did a study on this where researchers, you quote, in UCLA, analyzing the most popular American shows targeting children and teens, found that the most popular shows from the 1960s through the 1990s taught kids what's most important is doing the right thing, being a good friend, telling the truth, even if it hurts. But in more recent popular shows, such as Survivor and American Idol, the focus is on winning and becoming famous. I think this is just being, this is nice compared to all the other stuff that's out there. You know, please talk more about this study.
Yeah, so this is a UCLA study where they looked, as you said, at the most popular TV shows targeting children and teenagers. And they found from 1967 through 1997, even though the shows were very different, the message was the same. As you just said, it's all about doing the right thing, being a good friend, telling the truth even if it hurts. And that was true whether you're talking about the Andy Griffith Show in 1967 or Buffy the Vampire Slayer in 1997. But then between 1997 and 2007, everything switched. And suddenly being famous, which had been the least important thing, became the most important thing. In shows like Survivor, iCarly, American Idol, suddenly it's all about winning, doing the right thing. That's going to get you voted off the island. And it's gotten only worse since that time. So we have really good research showing that American culture changed. And it changed most dramatically between 1997 and 2007. And the researchers wondered, why is that? Why did the culture change? And the answer they give is social media. Social media transformed American culture. Suddenly it was all about how many likes you get, how many followers you have, and it's only gotten worse since 2007. Parents, again, have to be on their guard, and you need to really limit what your kids are doing on YouTube, what they're doing on TikTok. And again, the parental monitoring apps, I have no affiliation with any of them, but you got to choose one of them to put on any device that has internet access, because it's not reasonable for you as a busy parent to be constantly hovering over your kid's shoulder. And I don't expect you to, but the apps will do that and explain to your kid, look, it's my job as your parent to limit, govern, and guide what you're doing online. And so this app is going to show me what you're doing. It's going to stop you from doing some of this stuff, and it's going to report to me what you're doing. And if I see you doing something bad, you may lose the device.
Mm, great advice. I mean, amazing, great advice. In your book, I remember certain things from it that really stood out, particularly this book, Girls on the Edge. And you talk about the performance of girls. This is what I vaguely remember, but it was so powerful. You know, the performance of girls in an all-girls school versus mixing them with boys and what it did to their overall performance. Can you talk about this? Because I remember going to.
I'm smiling is that's from the first edition, 2010.
Okay, let me just finish. Look, because I remember going to a Catholic all-boys school, and I remember the effects, you know, that it's all boys and how you can focus and whatnot, and then going into now a public school where it's all mixed, and it was, you know, boys. The main thing on boys' mind was hooking up with the girls.
Well, so if you want to read that, they've got to find the old edition, the 2010 edition, because the new edition, the publisher, the editor, persuaded me to drop that. It's gone. And the reason they did that is because single-sex education is not an option for most Americans. It's just not. Fewer than 1% of American girls graduate from a girls' high school.
And I wanted to I'm sorry to interject. I just wanted to also bring this up. Why? Because we still do that. As Muslims, we still go ahead and separate the men, separate the women. Mm-hmm. So I want people to know, I mean, from a psychological science.
And I still have in chapter 7 of that book, the importance of connecting girls to a community of women, connecting boys to a community of men. That final chapter, so the last three chapters of Girls on the Edge are mind, body, and spirit. And that last chapter, spirit, what a girl needs to become a woman of faith is different from what a boy needs to become a man of faith. That's not a guess. We got good studies on this point. Mm-hmm. But what both boys and girls need is they need to be connected to community of adults. Girls need a community of women. Boys need a community of men. That's what the religious community needs to offer. And I actually have a workshop for communities of faith on what teens need. What they don't need is a pizza party for girls and boys together. And that's what, unfortunately, what many communities offer. It's not what they need. girls need a community of women, boys need a community of men. And when you do that, then you have strong bonds across generations. And that's what helps girls to become women of faith. That's what helps boys to become men of faith. So that's still in there. But the chapter on mind, which used to be all about the benefits of all girls' education, is gone and replaced with other information about helping girls to be confident and assertive and all that kind of stuff.
Do you remember clearly there in the book, I remember vaguely you talked about how, you know, the women, when men were present also, you know, they were more about focusing on attracting the boys and, you know, and same thing with the boy, well, the girl.
We have a lot of those interesting studies. So one group of researchers looked at girls in Chicago and also girls on a Native American reservation in Arizona or New Mexico. And they found when the girls were just playing dodgeball in an all-girls setting, they were really into it. They were playing hard. But the moment the boys came, many of the girls stepped back because sports are for boys. Mm-hmm. And the girls just stepped back and started talking to other girls, and the boys took the game over. Mm-hmm. So the co-ed format can really disadvantage girls in many domains. Certainly that's true in sports. Certainly it's true in computer science, physics, and engineering. But again, the publisher persuaded me to drop that because specifically girls' schools, it's just not an option for mm-hmm. most people living in the United States. And even in those cities that have girls' schools, most of them are private schools that are often expensive. I did lead a group for many years called the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education, and to encourage more public schools to offer single-sex options. And when we started, there were 7 girls' public schools and 1 boys' public school in the United States. When we shut down in 2012, there were 110 girls' public schools and 70 boys' public schools, which sounds like a lot, but there's more than 90,000 public schools in the United States. So mm-hmm. it's still less than 0.1%.
Yeah.
It's just not an option for most parents. So that's why, and we felt we could make better use of that chapter by talking about some of this newer research. So, but yeah, in the spiritual domain, in the religious community, absolutely. You want girls with women and boys with men. That's what the research says.
Let's talk about this wiring in the brain. The studies showing boys and girls are totally different. Male and females hardwired, the way they're hardwired, you know, yeah. How they smell, how they see. The New York Times published your article, girls yes. are better with odors,
100,000 times
more sensitive. Yeah. Here, you know, you have hearing, smell, more than 400 scientific scholarly references. Yeah. So here's my question, Dr. Sachs. Yeah. Have the people who are pushing this man can be a woman can be a man, this gender is a social construct, have they seen these scientific references, these scholarly references?
No, with very few exceptions. So let me first of all summarize what we were just talking about. So if you Google my name, Leonard Sachs, and New York Times and Stinky Socks, you'll find the article I wrote for the New York
Stinky
Times.
Stinky Socks.
Showing that indeed, for many odors, girls and women have a sense of smell that's much better than boys and men. 100,000 times more sensitive in some cases. So the woman says, "Oh my goodness, it really stinks in here. I'm going to throw up." And the man says, "I don't smell anything." And I think it's important, first of all, for men and women to understand this, because otherwise the woman's really angry. She's like, "How could you pretend you don't smell that? It's incredible. It's overpowering. How can you pretend you don't smell that?" He's not pretending. He's telling the truth. The man and the woman need to understand that they are experiencing different sensory worlds. Profound differences in vision, hearing, and smell. Again, this all comes from my book, Why Gender Matters. And again, when you debate, as I have debated, people who are pushing this transgender activism, the great majority of these people have never heard of this research and have no interest in it. They believe that male and female are an invention of the heteronormative patriarchy, and that anyone who thinks otherwise is an idiot, a Republican, or both. So,
but aren't these people who are like on certain other agendas? They were like, follow the science. Follow. Yes.
Well, there's a great contradiction there because they follow the science only when the science aligns with their politics. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't, they are ignorant and they have a remarkable lack of curiosity. Or when you really push the studies on them, they will desperately try to find some flaw. They'll say, well, that study was too small, or those people had an agenda. They haven't read the paper, though, so they're at great disadvantage because their criticisms are not valid. This is really compelling work. In another study that I often cite when I'm asked to speak on this topic, researchers recruited pregnant women in the third trimester of pregnancy and did high-resolution MRI scans of the baby still in the mother's womb and find very dramatic differences between the wiring of the boy's brain compared to the wiring of the girl's brain. And it's not a matter of development. The two brains are developing along different trajectories. We are born male or female. And then people will say, well, but intersex is just as common as red hair. 2% of humans are intersex, neither male nor female, or both male and female. Well, no, actually not. The correct number is not 2 in 100, but less than 2 in 10,000 live births are actually intersex. Intersex is a very rare anomaly. And for people who are confused or want to read the literature, I advise them to Google the phrase, "How Common is Intersex?" The title of a paper I wrote for the Journal of Sex Research, one of my most cited papers. Showing that when you add up the highest possible numbers for these very rare conditions, so for example, XX and XY embryo are fused, and this individual is a mix of two different chromosomal complements, one male XY, the other female XX. This individual has both an ovary and a testicle, producing both male and female hormones, a true intersex individual. That particular anomaly, about 1 in 2 million live births, is extremely rare, but it happens. And if you're going to discuss this topic, you need to be prepared to talk about intersex. But the first thing to understand is that intersex is very rare. It's less common than Siamese twins, than conjoined twins. We don't develop a theory of personality built around Siamese twins as the norm. Siamese twins are not the norm. They're a very rare exception. And a theory of personality built on two heads sharing one body would not be helpful because that's a very rare anomaly. It is not a normal variation. Intersex, likewise, is a very rare anomaly. It is not a normal variation. Being left-handed is a normal variation. Being intersex is not a normal variation. It is a unique and unusual pathology. And again, the transgender activists try to use intersex as part of their ideological battering ram to break down this intuition that most humans have, that we are either male or female, not both, not neither. So if you're going to debate this topic with the transgender activists, I encourage you first to read my paper, "How Common is Intersex?" so that you're prepared to say, no, intersex is not common. It's not as common as red hair. It's about as common as Siamese twins. It's rare.
Can you just move your mic a little away from your mouth? It's creating just a little bit of static. There you go. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Just a few more questions before we conclude. Tell me this. You were very courageous enough, and this goes back to, I'm going to use one word because we're a family-friendly show, but it kind of, I can't not use it because, but I just don't want to take away from this powerful statement that you said. If you can elaborate on it, you said
it is malpractice.
Yeah.
To put that boy in a dress, change his name to Emily, and then prepare to cut off his balls.
Malpractice to put a boy in a dress and call him Emily and cut off his balls.
Yeah. So the American Academy of Pediatrics issued guidelines, official guidelines on what do you do if a 5-year-old boy says he's a girl or a 14-year-old girl says he's a boy. And the guidelines now say, these are the official guidelines from our nation's leading experts, are that you are to immediately transition. If that five-year-old boy says he's a girl, you are to change his name to Emily. You're to change the birth certificate to Emily. Justin never existed. You're to put him in a dress, and he's going to school as Emily, and that will lead down the road that leads to cross-sex hormones and castration. What was the evidence? Okay, the previous standard was what was called watchful waiting. So this boy says he's a girl. Why do you think you're a girl? Because I love ballet and only girls like ballet. Well, actually, some boys love ballet. There's nothing wrong with a boy liking ballet, and you can study ballet, but you're going to study ballet as a boy, not as a girl. That was the previous standard prior to the new guidelines. The American Academy now says that's bigotry. If you do that, you're bigoted, and you're ignoring the evidence. What's the evidence that watchful waiting is so harmful? Is conversion? They said watchful waiting is conversion therapy, and we know that conversion therapy doesn't work. And they cited one study in support of their claim that conversion therapy doesn't work. That one study was a study of adult men who were gay and wanted to be straight, and this one study showed that trying to convert them from gay to straight didn't work. And I said in my comment, which was published by the American Academy of Pediatrics, is still on their website, I said a study of sexual orientation in adult men is not relevant to the question of gender identity in five-year-olds. You would think that pediatricians would understand that children are not adults and that a study of adult sexual orientation is not relevant to children's gender identity. Sexual orientation and gender identity are very different things. But they didn't. So the guidelines stand, and it's immensely harmful. These guidelines are immensely harmful. I was hired as an expert witness in the case of a family whose 14-year-old daughter said that she's a boy, and the parents said, no, you're not a boy. We're not going to help you transition to the male role and get you cross-sex hormones. And so the 14-year-old, contacted Child Protective Services, and they took her out of the household and put her in foster care with a family that would give her cross-sex hormones. And the parents sued, said, no, we're the parents. We have the right to make that decision.
Where did this happen here in the U.S.?
This happened in Arizona.
This is
happening every day. And this is happening all the time in California. California, they actually tell the kids in the school, hey, if you want to transition and your parents don't want you to, come to us, and I'm your mom now, as one teacher in California said. And many cases, but this case was Arizona, which is not as crazy as California.
Yeah, keep it there. We hear you better when it's here, when it's by your mouth.
So I'm speaking one-on-one with a judge, and I'm explaining, look, the research shows that, and this particular girl is anxious, she's depressed, this is a manifestation of her psychiatric disorder, it is not best practice.
How old is she?
14 years
14.
old.
They took her out of the house.
They took her out of the house and put her in foster care. And the judge said, yeah, but what are the official guidelines of the American Academy of Pediatrics? I said, okay, the official guidelines of the American Academy of Pediatrics are you got to do what the girl wants you to do. And the judge said, so Dr. Sachs, you're telling us that you know better than the American Academy of Pediatrics. Remind me again, you're a family doctor. You're not a professor. You're just a family doctor. Dr. Sachs, you're asking me to take your word over the official guidelines of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Isn't that correct? I said, yes, that's exactly what I'm asking you to do. She said, I can't do that. You're just a family doctor. This is the American Academy of Pediatrics. And the parents lost their suit. They lost custody of their child. And this is happening. And so it is not just theoretical that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been politicized. It's harming kids right now. Kids are being mistreated. Healthy girls are having mastectomies at 13, 14, 15 years of age because they have been sucked into this toxic American culture. So again, you've got to be on your guard You got to limit what kids are seeing on TikTok and YouTube, because American popular culture has become really toxic. It's cool to be trans in the United States today.
Do you remember that? Have you ever watched that show, Sanford and Son?
Oh, that's a long time ago.
You remember Sanford and Son? When he'd hear some news, he said, oh, it's the big one. It's coming. It's coming. I'm telling you, this will make you cry. You know, this, when you hear this, it's no exaggeration. This just it just going back to the heart. Really, you know, for if your heart is alive, you're conscious, you're you know, a God conscious person, you're just a good person who wants to live by some morals. You know what I mean? You know, some you mentioned this is politicized. This has nothing to do with science, you know, and you're one man standing up against, may God Almighty bless you, you know, and reward you tremendously for taking the stand. I'm just so like impressed by this, you know. So what can a community, we had recently in Detroit, if you saw the news, they were showing on the news these books and they couldn't show the images, but then they're sexualizing the kids by showing them these images. And then you saw the Muslim community stepped up, you know, Christians also and other people who are against this. They stepped up, they unified, came together, and they were working to get these books out of there. What's your advice, you know, for parents, for others, you know, with along with the advice you're giving, you know, when boards come together, you know, when people are coming together to push this stuff on the kids, sexualization of the kids at such a young age?
Yeah, schools are important. And again, I just did an interview for the Epoch Times about some of these books that they're putting in the kindergarten, first, second grade, teaching little kids that it's normal to have two moms, that it's, if you are, that it's courageous to be trans, telling six-year-olds that if you're not comfortable being a boy, then maybe you're a girl. It's wildly age inappropriate. It is harmful. It is toxic. It is destabilizing. The male-female binary is real. There's a sperm. There's an egg. Anything in between is pathology. If it's not a sperm or an egg, then it's not a gamete and it won't work. That's okay. That's the way God made us. And there's so much toxicity in what's out there. You got to know what's going on in your school. And if you find the things are going on that aren't healthy, then you need to reach out to other parents and approach the school leadership with the other parents. Don't ever try to do this on your own. One angry parent is just a nuisance. 10 angry parents can make a change. So reach out to other parents. Reach across faiths. I speak at Catholic. I speak at synagogues. I speak at Muslim. They all know that we are children of God. And we have so much more in common than that unifies us. So that we can speak together across faiths and go to that superintendent, that principal, and say, this is not acceptable. The public school needs to be accountable to the public school parents. And what you're doing here, we will not tolerate. There has to be a change. And you can do it. You can make a change.
You have stepped across those boundaries, and you just said something brilliant. We have to work together, you know, reach across, and you've done that. You can be being a shining example. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people of other faiths out there who feel as strongly as we feel, but now there's a lot of times there's hesitation because all them Muslims, you know, them terrorists, them this, that, and the other, you know what I mean? And I'm going to play a quick quiz game with you to see. It's called Did You Know? Just before we conclude. But what advice do you have for others out there who maybe they're still stuck in their town? They haven't got out to travel. They're still thinking these Muslims, they want to chop our heads off. You know, there's this, that, and the other and whatnot. And we're losing out because we're not able to unify. We're divided and we're not working together to combat some of this thing, this attack on our children.
Well, I think there's a lot of stereotyping on both sides. I have spoken in many rural communities, and you can change minds. Don't give up on your fellow human beings. You may encounter people who are prejudiced against the Muslim community. Reach out to them. Talk to them. You can change their mind. Don't be discouraged.
Did you know, I'm going to ask you this before I come, did you know that Muslims, it's an article of their faith to believe and love Jesus? Did you know that, Dr. Sachs?
I believe that Jesus is regarded as a prophet.
Yes, it's a mighty Islam. Messenger, yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. And did you know that there's a chapter named after his blessed mother called the chapter of Maryam, Surah Maryam, in the Quran? Did you know this?
Yes, I did. I have been gifted the Quran by a number of Muslim communities, and it has a special place on my bookshelf.
And I just make these points because this can be an icebreaker. These talking points are so important that, you know, when we say Jesus, we say peace be upon him. We hold him to such a high reverence. Obviously, we don't believe he's God or literal son of God, but he's a mighty messenger, just like Abraham, Moses, and all the other preceding messengers who brought the same message of worship one God, the creator, not the creation. It's very straightforward. And I think this, you know, when people know this, that they love our Jesus. Yes, we love him. As Muslims, we love Jesus. This can hopefully soften some hearts and we can get beyond some of these negative false stereotypes. God willing.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
Inshallah.
Inshallah. God willing. Yes. So before we conclude now, your books, the books are called Why Gender Matters, Boys Adrift, Girls on the Edge. You can't get that one that I read now, huh?
It's still out there.
It's still out there.
But yeah. It's way out of date because, you know, the major focus of that book is on the harms of social media. But TikTok did not exist when I wrote the first edition. So the second edition is much more up to date.
I want to also do you visit Florida at all?
Of course.
So you've been to Tampa?
I've been to Tampa on many occasions. I've spoken on many occasions for the school district of Hillsborough County, sixth largest school district in the United States, and all across Central Florida, from Volusia County, Daytona Beach, DeLand, to Orlando and Tampa. Absolutely.
You were telling me about the other imam. What was his name again?
Imam Tahir Anwar.
So he was someone who recommended to board members and others to bring you out. And from there, people start bringing you out. I want to go ahead and call upon my audience to go ahead and start bringing you out. And I'll be one of the first, if not in Florida. We've taken the Dean Show. We're looking, thank God, we have acquired the property. It's called the Dean Center.
We're here with Siraj from Daoud Sohail Law Firm. Yeah. All right, guys. So we signed everything here. Bismillah. Now we're off to the next step. We gotta get the keys now.
يا هلا ويا هلا ويا هلا ويا هلا حن قلبي على جمعة الخير هلا حن قلبي على جمعة الخير هلا بالحب اجتمعنا وربنا يحييكم بالحب اجتمعنا وربنا يحييكم مرحبا ويا هلا فيكم انتم منا واحنا فيكم بالمحبة نحييكم يا هلا ويا هلا يا هلا ويا هلا ويا هلا ويا هلا يا هلا ويا هلا ويا
Of Muslims around here, it's pretty huge, and the place, the location that you opened in, basically it's further south from the other big masajid, and everyone, I know a lot of people that I come, my cousin lives 9 minutes from here, another uncle of mine lives about 5 to 10 minutes from here. This area, the masjid, alhamdulillah, opened up in an area that it's much needed, and this size, this center is much needed for this area, and the idea of this center is needed for the whole state, because we don't have anything like that in the whole state, the da'wah center where it's going to basically nurture and basically educate, and it's going to basically spread Islam.
Now we're in the works of getting it built up, and God willing, inshallah, it'll be open and hopefully within a year. And then I like to start doing live events there and bringing out people like yourself. And I want you also, hopefully, when I send an invitation, to come on down to Tampa and do some of your presentations and do a live show in front of a live studio audience, God willing. How's that sound?
I'd love to do it.
I love it. All right. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you for speaking the truth.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Peace be with you, as we say. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum. And if you like this episode of The Dean Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.